Good evening, good morning, and welcome. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Dave Schrader. I'll be your host for the evening. Thank you for joining me. I want to take a quick few seconds to thank the Coast to Coast audience for welcoming me and being so kind. I've received enormous amounts of email from the listeners in support for the episodes that I've been able to fill in on since October of last year. So just wanted to put out a personal thank you to everybody that's tuned in and for the support and the variance of different topics we've covered in the last 6 to 8 months here on the show when I've been afforded the time. I also want to thank very graciously Lisa Lyon and George Norrie for allowing me to come on and be a part of the Coast to Coast world. It's been such a pleasure doing this. We've got an interesting show coming up tonight. Aside from the supernatural, paranormal, and the strange fringe elements of the world, I'm very intrigued by true crimes, and especially when you can get a look at a crime and a criminal so unbelievably talented, I guess, at what he does, that it defies all logic. And tonight we're going to be talking about a very chilling case. We'll do that in a little bit. I want to mention, since we're kind of on the true crime angle, I had a chance to see a movie here, a sneak preview of the movie Deliver Us from Evil, which is about a New York police officer, Ralph Sarchi, struggling with his own personal issues. He becomes involved in this series of strange crimes, disturbing, kind of inexplicable crimes, and he joins forces with this priest, kind of an unconventional priest, who is schooled in the rituals of exorcism to combat the frightening and demonic possessions that are terrorizing the city. The movie's based upon real accounts from the book that Ralph Sarchi wrote a number of years ago. And I would say this is one of the best horror slash suspense movies I've had a chance to see in a very long time. Look for it coming out. It'll be in theaters July 2nd. Deliver Us from Evil. Out of 4 stars, I would give it a very solid 3.5 stars for entertainment, spookiness, and great suspense. It's great to see when a movie can come out and capture all of those different aspects and do it really well. Very good acting, very good writing and directing, and had a very even tone throughout the entire movie. Always kept you guessing. So I appreciate that. And again, because we're going to be talking tonight about true crimes in a very chilling case, I wanted to throw that out there. I think that's a very interesting movie people will enjoy. Our guest for the evening is John Cameron. He's a 53-year-old retired police detective from Great Falls, Montana. His career in law enforcement began back in 1979, and he retired in 2005 as a sergeant of detectives working cold cases. And that's important for you to realize this evening as we talk with our guest. This is a retired sergeant of detectives with a specialty in working cold cases. He's worked with FBI serial killer task forces, catching ritualistic child cannibal killer Nathan Bar Jonah. His cases have been featured on America's Most Wanted, Dateline NBC, and he helped produce a series known as Most Evil on True TV back in 2010, while working as an analyst for the Montana Board of Pardons and Parole in Deer Lodge Prison, Montana. He was in a position to access information that had been kept secret for 55 years and may have unraveled the most intelligent serial killer ever, the life and crimes of Edward Wayne Edwards. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. Stay tuned. This is a story you need to hear to believe on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, for this evening. Joining me right now, John A. Cameron. He's the author of the new book, It's Me, Edward Wayne Edwards, the serial killer you never heard of. The story that you have put together in this book, John, has got to be one of the most chilling accounts of true crime I've ever read. It, from cover to cover, enthralled me, and just following this strange web of deception and evil that this one man perpetrated. When you began your journey researching Edward Wayne Edwards, did you have any idea what you were about to find?
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Dave, and thanks to Coast. It's a show that kept me awake many times working night shift as a police officer. But no, I had no idea how crazy this adventure was going to turn in 2010 when I first was introduced to Mr. Edwards. I knew he was evil, but I had no idea the extent of what he had done. He had gotten away with murder for 66 years.
Let's start at the beginning and give a little background about this man, this beast, and fill us in a little bit. I mean, you know, this sounds like a Hollywood script, the way his life began, and it gives a little insight into what might have broken the spirit and humanity of this person and sent them off. So tell us a little bit about the early years of Edward Wayne Edwards.
Well, Edward was born in the area of Cleveland, Ohio in 1933. It was the height of the Great Depression. He was conceived probably in the backseat of a car. He never knew his father. By the age of four, his mother ended up in prison, and he was raised by an aunt and uncle up until his mother came out of prison at age five. And once mother came out of prison at age five, he was handed back to mother, single mother at the height of the Great Depression. You were known as a bastard back then, and it was a very shameful thing to have a child without a father. Within 1 year of his mother getting out of prison, she dies of a suspicious gunshot wound to her stomach in August of 1938. And at that point, he is removed from the home. His name is changed. His name was actually born Charles Edward Meyer. And after his mother is shot and dies, his name is changed to Edward Wayne Edwards. And he's placed in Parmadale Catholic Orphanage near Cleveland, Ohio. And he's 5 years old. And by the time he's 8 years old in Parmadale, he's been sexually abused by the older boys, beaten by the nuns for bedwetting, and turns into a psychopathic monster, basically, and details all of this, his upbringing, in a book he writes when he's 39 years old, claiming to be a reformed criminal.
Now, is there any legitimacy to this, or was he, because he was such a master craftsman and such a master manipulator, do you believe that he helped to flesh out the story because it built some sympathy for him? Because at that time, it seemed like he was trying to show that it was a case of redemption in his life. Where do you weigh in on what the truth is from, you know, fact and fake there?
Well, that's what was nice about Mr. Edwards being a criminal, is he wanted to lay the groundwork so all the evidence could be put together by somebody to challenge him as he got older. So all of the psychiatric records that he had from age five all the way up through his capture in 2009 were available to me. I recovered some of them. And it showed that he, in fact, was a sadomasochist psychopath by age 11 and was committing crimes of recognition. He, what the psychiatrist felt was that he had such confliction at a young age about who his mother was and how he was conceived and then sexually abused between the ages of 5 to 11, that he was just destroyed spiritually by that point and became a serial killer at age 11 and then never got caught until 2009 when he was 76 years old.
At the age of 11, he began a murder spree. How is that even possible?
He escaped Parmadale Catholic Orphanage at the age of 11. He had spent 5 years there and went to Chicago and committed his first three murders.
At the age of 11, how does an 11-year-old, first of all, kill three people and get away with it and not continue to be on his own? I mean, that just seems so far-fetched and so far from the reality we know and understand now.
Yeah, when most of us picture an 11-year-old, we know we picture a young kid who hasn't gone through puberty or maturity. But, you know, most of us as kids growing up, there was always the one kid in junior high school that went through everything early. And Edwards was completely mature by age 11. His testicles had dropped. He had gone through puberty. He was a very old 11-year-old, and he had been very hard risen in the Parmadale Catholic Orphanage. Plus, he had an incredible IQ of 132, And he used that to his advantage to fool psychiatrists his whole life.
He, as my understanding is, he made a pact with the devil to kind of just become this force of dark nature. Explain to us a little bit of how he explained that out and where this came from.
Yeah, the satanic part of this case is what was very disturbing. You know, he was raised in a Catholic orphanage, and I was raised Catholic, and I know about all the Catholic rituals in the church, the Stations of the Cross, the altar boys, all of these rituals that the church does during its masses. But Edwards was completely destroyed in Palmerdale Catholic Orphanage, sexually and physically and mentally, and decided to take everything that the Catholic Church forced him to do and turn it to the dark side and have his victims perform some of those rituals before he would kill them. So he became satanic at a very young age. He studied Aleister Crowley, who in 1934 was actually at the height of his wickedness. He was known as one of the most wicked men in the 19th, 20th century, and believed he was going to bring on a revolution of man should do what he wants and murder and mayhem. And Edwards was raised during this period and started to obsess about Aleister Crowley at a very young age and decided that he would take everything against the Catholic Church. And he did it everywhere until his capture.
So he makes this pact. And at the age of 11, who is his first victim?
His first victim is a woman in bed, kind of representing his mother. Beats her in the face, and does horrible things to her. His second victim is another woman in bed who's also shot, beat, tape placed over their bodies. And then his third victim is a six-year-old girl lured out of her house at night while her parents slept in 1946 and beheaded and dismembered in a basement. And that was known as the lipstick killings. And the lipstick killer left very immaturish messages stating, please stop me, I can't control myself, I'm going to kill more. And it was clearly written by a young person, and it was written by Edward Edwards when he was 11 and 12 years old, and he couldn't control himself in killing, and he did it his whole life.
At that age, I mean, do you believe he was really seeking help and he wanted to be caught? Or was this the beginning of the manipulation stage and trying to toy with law enforcement and toy with the community to put this fear of God in them?
Well, I think he really wanted to be stopped, but he also loved the recognition that it caused. And by recognition, what he enjoyed was the murder would happen. It would receive massive publicity in the newspaper, and nobody knew that the killer was just standing right in front of everybody. So he would tease the police with false letters and immaturish letters in the early days of 45 and 46 and try to get them to catch him. He always felt that he was smarter than the police and the court system throughout his whole life. And it started at age 11 and 12, and he was successful at age 12 in the setup of William Herons to be the lipstick killer. And so at a very young age, Edwards was able to kill, watch another man go down for the crime, and then that would become his MO for the rest of his life, would be to kill somebody, steer the evidence towards an innocent person, and then watch the system kill for him. And that's kind of what he meant when he said later on in life that he was killing slaves for his afterlife, that he was not only killing, but he was getting the system to kill for him also.
The 11, 12-year-old young boy, not only is he committing murder, but he's also intelligent enough to figure out how to frame somebody else for this crime. And how did he go about picking the victim that he would pin this crime on?
William Herons became a suspect 6 months after the 1946 killing of six-year-old Suzanne Dignan in Chicago. And he was coerced into a confession, basically, and beaten into a confession, and did confess in 1946 and then recant the rest of his life, but spent 66 years in prison. What Edwards would do would manipulate the press and the police with false information that would kind of steer to somebody, whoever they may be looking at the time, And 6 months after Suzanne Dignan happened, William Herons gets busted for a burglary in the area where she had been killed, and so he becomes a suspect. And Edward starts manipulating police in 1946 in Chicago to go after him, and they did. And he ends up getting life, 66 years in prison. He just died in 2012, and there's YouTube videos online of interviews of him when he's just before he's died. And it's pretty incredible. It's pretty telling that he was definitely wrongfully accused of being a lipstick killer for 66 years.
Did he go to his grave not knowing who was most likely responsible for the murders?
Yeah, he did. He never knew. He knew he was being framed, but he didn't know by who. And that's kind of the case in every one of Edwards' murders where he framed somebody. They knew they were being framed, but they just never could figure out who was doing it or why they were doing it. But that was part of his IQ and his intelligence. He really enjoyed watching the system go after the innocent people because he knew they would if he supplied them the right information.
And this, again, this is coming from the mind of an 11 and 12-year-old learning to manipulate. And you start to wonder, is there something to this satanic pact, this satanic, you know, connection where he's going against what he was raised and feeling that he is now going to spend his life going against whatever the church had taught him and trying to cause as much murder and mayhem and chaos and take down as many people as he could. I think the fascinating and most terrifying part of the case, aside from the brutal murders that he committed, was the fact that so many people that died, so many people that were blamed for these murders, their lives were lost and lost in public view, and there was nothing they could do about it. You know, it's one thing to be snuck up on and murdered in your bed or tricked outside and killed quickly. It's another thing to have to sit in prison for 66 years for a crime you did not commit. All the while, this man is still out there committing more and more crimes and getting better at what he does. What was the evidence that pointed you to these three cases that led you to your conclusion that it was Edward Wayne Edwards? Did he admit to those first three killings?
Well, in the end, he admitted it when he was 72 years old on the internet after he got very highly intelligent, became very computer illiterate, and started putting out his own website where he actually confesses to being the lipstick killer and the killer of Elizabeth Short, the Black Dahlia, in 1947, a year later after he had killed little six-year-old Suzanne Dignan in 46. But that wasn't how I got to this conclusion. This all began because I had a 1956 Lover's Lane unsolved murder in Great Falls, Montana that happened. And I tied Edwards to that murder in 2010. And that's the first murder that I tied him to in my investigation. But that led to going all the way back to 1945, 46, when he began his killing. He had killed a couple in my hometown in 56, and he had did it with such accuracy and precision that you knew whoever the killer was. He was highly intelligent, and Edwards was only 22 years old in 1956 when he came to my hometown and killed that couple on the Lover's Lane. And I knew he had been killing much earlier than that, just based on the evidence I found on that case.
So you find this connection for a cold case that you're researching and investigating. How, after that many years, from 56 to 2000, did you find a connection for a man that would have been in your town that seemed to come and go at will and never make a scene? How did you pin him to that crime?
Well, in 2010, Edwards was 77 years old, and he had just been caught for his first murder a year earlier. But in 2010, he contacted the press, and he confessed to five murders to the press. And those videos can be seen on YouTube. If you just search Edward Edwards, part one, part two, and part three, you can watch all three videos. But he went to the press first to confess to five murders. And then it was determined that he wrote a book in 1972 titled Metamorphosis of a Criminal, The True Life Story of Ed Edwards. And he went around the country after he wrote that book in 1972 claiming that he was a reformed criminal and now he was a happily married family man with five children. But once he got identified in 2010 as a serial killer, the whole book took on a whole different meaning. And inside the book, Great Falls, Montana was mentioned. He placed himself in Great Falls in 1956 in the book, and that began to unravel what the book really was. It was a serial killer's puzzle of a set of murders he did from 1945 until 1968 when he came out of Leavenworth prison claiming that he was a reformed criminal.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue talking with our guest, John Cameron. It's me, Edward Wayne Edwards, the serial killer you've never heard of. That continues on Coast to Coast AM. The life and crimes of Edward Wayne Edwards. That's our focus tonight. Edwards, a misguided boy, vowed to be the best criminal ever. A satanic or demonic pact he made. He killed scores and scores of people of all ages over a 66-year period and was never caught for murder. Included are some of the most famous murder cases in the past century. What are the Black Dahlia murders, Zodiac, Atlanta child murders, Chandra Levy, the killings at Sherwood Forest and that was featured in the West Memphis 3 documentaries, and JonBenet Ramsey have in common? Well, the answer to this is probably one of the most chilling facts you'll ever hear. As unbelievable as it may seem, it's me, Edward Wayne Edwards, the serial killer you've never heard of. That's the topic on tonight's show. Check out our guest's website at coldcasecameron.com. That's coldcasecameron.com. John A. Cameron, our guest for the evening. We'll open up phone lines in hour four for you to question our guest and be a part of the show with us. We'll take another quick break, and we'll be back with more Coast to Coast AM right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. John Cameron is our guest for the evening. He's the author of a book called It's Me, Edward Wayne Edwards, the serial killer you never heard of. Truly one of the most chilling true crime books I've ever read. And tonight we'll be exploring the life and times of one of the most prolific killers in the United States history, a name that no one knows about, but is finally coming to light due to the diligent work of a cold case examiner, John A. Cameron. And John, let's continue talking about this. You mentioned that he also admitted online that he was the murderer of the Black Dahlia. Now, I noticed that a lot of the claims that he made, it's real simple to make these claims because they're unsolved cases. And why not take note for some of the most well-recognized, most famous crimes that somebody got away with, because it would just make you seem even more intelligent and more of a genius. Did you ever have any, I guess, skepticism to these massive claims he was making?
Well, he was never really making the claims other than he was putting them out on the internet, writing his books. He had albums out. And all of these things that he produced, all these media that he produced, were clues to be followed, like his book was. So the Black Dahlia case didn't even come into the investigation until 2 years into it. It was really the unraveling of what his book, Metamorphosis of a Criminal, was. And I'd like to read the cover for the listeners, because it's very important. The book is titled Metamorphosis of a Criminal, and it starts out on the very front cover. It says, he was on the FBI's list of the 10 most wanted criminals. He was a holdup man, a bank robber, a dangerous character. He spent 14 years in 5 jails. Now he is a writer, a respected citizen, and the head of a family of 5. Metamorphosis of a Criminal, the true life story of Ed Edwards. And on the front cover where that I just read is two men. There's the killer up in the left-hand corner holding a gun and in a pose ready to attack. And down in the right-hand corner is the doctor carrying the attaché case. And that was his ruse. He was two people. He was most evil, and he was the guy, your best friend. The book ended up becoming a puzzle of murder. And that book led to the Black Dahlia solution .org website that I eventually found later on in the investigation. But he actually detailed the killing of Elizabeth Short in the book. Suzanne Dignan, the 6-year-old girl out of Chicago in 1946, he detailed that. But he would never leave the reader thinking he killed them. He would describe horrible beatings, rapes, torture, but then he would leave the reader thinking, oh, he's not such a bad guy. But the book actually was completely accurate from his time he was born until the time he came out of Leavenworth Prison in 1967, just before he committed the Zodiac killings. And inside the book were all of the murders that he had committed from age 11 up until his metamorphosis into a family man, and it was all a scam.
But he never actually claims to do these murders. He just claims that he was involved in nefarious crimes in all these cities. But you were able to kind of piece together that in every city during the dates he was pinning it to, that was one of the most famous unsolved murder crimes. Is that my understanding?
That's the way the whole book went, is if you had taken his criminal records, which were incredibly extensive, he had a criminal record from 1949 up until his capture in 2009 for impersonating officers, arson, forgery, burglary, robbery. So he was a very bad guy. And the book was accurate right down to his NCIC criminal records also. And I, working in Deer Lodge Prison, had access to that information in 2010. And so using his NCIC records and the book and where he said he was when he talks in the book, it revealed the murders. And this was a lengthy process. This whole investigation took 4 years. But once I discovered the Great Falls murder in the book, it explained exactly what the book was, and that ended up being true, that the book was the Zodiac Killer's puzzle of murder thrown in the face of society just before he killed everybody in the Zodiac. And it was a taunt.
John, when you start looking at this, and understand, I'm trying to play devil's advocate here for the listeners as well, not in so much questioning your authority or your intelligence, but you know, is it sometimes that you want to see patterns and you look for these things? I mean, it probably could be said throughout my lifetime that if we looked in cities and states where I visited during parts in my life, that we could probably find some heinous unsolved crime. Does that necessarily make me a killer just because I was in the town when that murder occurred?
Yeah, that's true. You know, and that happens in every murder case when you're looking for the guy. You come across dead ends, and then you begin to wonder, well, maybe I'm seeing things that I'm really not seeing there. But in this case, Edwards always put it out there. He wanted to stand in front and make sure the information was there to be found by somebody. That was his intelligence. He wanted somebody to challenge him, and he wanted to be known as the worst killer ever when finally caught. So in the very beginning, I couldn't believe where it was leading, actually. After I tied him to the Lover's Lane murder in 1956 in Great Falls, and then determined that he was the Zodiac killer after solving some of the cryptograms in the Zodiac case, I had a friend that became involved, and we ended up solving the identity cipher on the Zodiac case, and it named Edward Edwards. And this was very early on in July of 2010, and that's when I began confronting Edwards in prison, and I began a year relationship with him, me, and a friend of mine, Neil. We corresponded with Edwards and played a game of murder with him. He was a game player of murder, and he was a letter writer, and he wanted to be challenged, and so I challenged him with letters for 8 months, and he wrote back, and it was one of the most intense investigations that year before he died that I really never thought I'd be involved in.
When you're looking through, and I want to tie one thing in, you mentioned the first three murders that they referred to as the lipstick murder, right?
Or the lipstick killer.
Wasn't there something bizarre with the Black Dahlia case as well? Wasn't there something, was it something written or carved on her that kind of matched up to the things that had been seen in those other three murders?
Yeah, over the decades, many web sleuths on the websites, investigators felt that the Elizabeth Short Black Dahlia killing and the Suzanne Dignan, little six-year-old girl in Chicago killing were related. And in the end, they were, because Edwards ended up putting up the BlackDahliaSolution.org website that was his confession to those two killings. And in that website, he connected the Suzanne Dignan Black Dahlia case and the JonBenet Ramsey case. And the reason I bring up the JonBenet Ramsey case is Suzanne Dignan, who was killed January of 1946, was a little blonde 6-year-old girl sleeping in her house, who was lured out of her house at night while her parents slept. A ransom note was left. She was brought into the basement, beheaded, cut up in pieces, spread around the sewers of Chicago. Her father was in charge of the funding for Edwards's Parmadale Catholic Orphanage. Suzanne Dignan's father ran a government program that cut funding while Edwards was at Parmadale, and that's why he targeted Suzanne Dignan in 1946 and then killed JonBenet Ramsey 50 years later, 1996, in the same manner, and threatening to behead her and leaving her in the basement. So this whole thing ties over a period of 66 years of murder, and he would mimic his murders. He would make them similar, but just slightly different, but doing them in states all over the United States. He did it everywhere.
Let me ask you this. You mentioned the BlackDahliaSolution.org. The URL was created and purchased back in 2002. It was renewed and updated on May 4th, 2014, and it expires next year. But it's listed as being owned by John Desmond of Strategic Office Solutions in Nottingham, New Hampshire. How does that tie?
It switched ownership several times since its 2002. I tried to track it back in 2011, and there was a different owner back then. But I don't know how it works out that somebody else ends up purchasing that website. I suppose somebody could let it expire, but that website ended up being one of the most intense, horrible writings that I've ever seen.
BlackDahliaSolution.org. Well, have you reached out to John Desmond to contact him and see if what his relationship to the story is in the case and why he would continue this website or how he got access to it?
You know, back in 2011 when I discovered it, I spoke to the URL person back then, and they're just not cooperative. And so I haven't really even tried to contact anybody regarding that website since 2011. I've given all that information to law enforcement over the last 4 years and was hoping that they would be doing all that. But I have really had quite a negative experience with law enforcement in regards to this.
Which is very strange to me, right? Because in law enforcement, the idea is to get the bad guy, to find the criminal responsible for these heinous crimes and to provide justice. And understand, I'm not in any way picking on law enforcement officials. I've got law enforcement officials peppered throughout my family. I respect the lives that they put on the line on a daily basis for us. There are many listeners, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, that are police officers that listen to Coast, that listen to my show, Darkness Radio, and tune in while they're in their patrol cars doing their work. I fully support law enforcement, but why is it that there are cases like this that you have got such amazing definitive proof to tie these killers or this killer to these cases, and the police officers and the corresponding thin blue line, you would think, seems to be rebuking you and wants nothing to do with coming up with another alternative response?
Well, that's what happened in 2010 when Edwards went public on the videos you can see on YouTube. Is everybody saw him. Edwards was an informant his whole life. He knew police officers all over the place. In fact, when he would move, and he moved often, he would first go introduce himself to the police so he could be right inside with them. He was always under assumed name. But he set people up. That was his M.O. And so I found almost 24 people that he set up from 1945 until 2010. And these people are sitting in prison, 9 of them still sitting in prison. They've been convicted, some by juries, some even confessed to spare the death penalty. Nobody, once they're in prison, there is nobody I have found in the government at any level, whether it's local, city, county, state, federal, that wanted to get involved in the investigation of Edward Edwards, and they never did. And I know that because I ended up interviewing his wives, and they didn't. And it was very frustrating. But I have a feeling it's because, you know, there's a lot of cases out there where there's innocent men sitting in prison on the false evidence this man perpetuated, and they would just as soon turn a blind eye. I haven't had a lot of support at all.
Is that frightening for you as a law enforcement official yourself, and having been in that position and working those kind of cases yourself, to realize that the idea of real justice doesn't seem to be wanted once they've found a criminal, once they've put somebody away, that these places do not seem to want to revisit these cases and make sure that real justice has been served?
Yeah, the only time they will revisit them is when they're, you know, forced legally by somebody. But there was nobody within the system that ever investigated Ed Edwards. So other than the local agencies on the murders he finally confessed to in Ohio and Wisconsin, now those agencies investigated him for those murders. But nobody took the time to say, hey, this guy just got caught at the age of 76. How long has he been killing? And so that's what I did. Once I tied him to the 1956 murder, I spent the last 3-4 years following his entire life, interviewing his families, his kids, his coworkers, and doing the job of what actually should have been done. That Edwards should have, a case should have been done by the FBI on Ed Edwards, but it wasn't.
Well, let me bring you back real quickly. Talking about the Black Dahlia case, you believe that the evidence is truly on the website. He posted it and admitted to it. How do you know that he is the one that started that website? What was your corroboration to prove that Ed Edwards had, you know, was the owner of that original website?
Well, how that all came about is I took his book, Metamorphosis of a Criminal, and tore it apart and turned it into a PDF file so you could search it on the internet, and you could search phrasings and things like that, because I knew Edwards was on the internet. His wife had told me he had been blogging against some of the big sites about some murders, and I wanted to see if I could find some phrasing in his book that would match phrasing out there on the internet, and it came up on the BlackDahliaSolution.org site under the author's frequently asked questions, and it was him placing himself, being 13 years old in Los Angeles at the time of the Elizabeth Short Black Dahlia killing, that began the unraveling that site was authored by Ed Edwards. And
but there is so much compelling evidence from other people, especially, Steve Hodell has written a book called The Black Dahlia Avenger and Black Dahlia Avenger 2, where he believes he has definitively put the fork in that case and can prove beyond, in his opinion, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that his father, George Hodell, truly was the Black Dahlia murderer. And now he has enough evidence and has shown it to enough legal personnel that they believe that he can make a very compelling case that his father was also the Zodiac killer. And that, to me, is very compelling. And Steve Hodell is a retired police officer and a private investigator, and not somebody that would be, you know, just sitting in their mom's basement prone to hallucinations and fantasy. He's an officer of the law who's been able to review this evidence and make a pretty compelling and startling case for the fact that his father is that killer. There are extreme cases where they are showing in very detailed information that claims that their father is the killer in the Zodiac cases. And you see these different families coming forward with these claims. How can there be that many people that have such really definitive information, but yet you still believe that Ed Edwards didn't just manipulate it, read the same stories on the internet, flesh them together, and find ways to tie the threads together?
You know, I spoke to Steve Hodell, and I did read his books. And when I got involved in this investigation, I never really got involved in the Zodiac case or the Black Dahlia case prior to me being introduced to Ed Edwards. So I respect Steve Hodell, and I know he's a very good investigator. The difference here was Edwards was dropped in my lap in 2010. After I found the psychiatric records from Deer Lodge Prison. And if you want to claim that, you know, your father or somebody's father is the Zodiac killer or the killer of Elizabeth Short, you have to tie that man to all of the letters the Zodiac killer sent. And the Zodiac killer sent letters from 1968 all the way through up until 2009. And in order for other people to have been the Zodiac killer, then they have to dismiss all those letters and just call them fakes.
Let's take a break. We'll come back after the top of the hour and continue with John Cameron as we research more about his book, It's Me, Edward Wayne Edwards, the Serial Killer You Never Heard Of. Stay tuned. Coast to Coast continues right after this.